seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. Back to do it all over again today. Fun show lined up for you. We are going to talk local and national sports. On the local end, let's recap the junior college basketball season. Came to an end not quite a week ago. Last Friday, both the USU Eastern men and women falling in the semifinals. We're going to recap today with Coach Bill Evans, who just completed his first season as head coach. He made that transition from a well-known D1 coach to JUCO. So I'm looking forward to talking with Coach Evans. That'll be a little later on the show. And then also today, we'll be joined by Dave Parker. And this was an interview that I've been looking forward to for a little while. If you're even just mildly interested in the game of baseball, I think you'll find this interview interesting, to say the least. Dave Parker, known as the Cobra, had a very interesting career, talking about everything from the Pirates in 1973 to 1983 to serving a full-year suspension in Major League Baseball, winning two World Series, one in 79, one in 89, winning one in each league, one with the Pirates, one with the A's. He was a NL MVP in 1978, three-time Gold Glove Award winner, two-time NL batting champ. He's in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. And he took over for Roberto Clemente when he had tragically passed away for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, that's a city that was just reeling, because when you look at what Clemente meant, not only to the organization, but to baseball, I mean, he was one of the greatest to ever do it. And so for Parker to step into that role as a kid, the pressure had to be high, right? We'll talk to Dave Parker. We'll talk about his new book. It's called Cobra, in which he's talking about the brotherhood in Major League Baseball. We'll get into all that. It'll be a little bit later right here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at the national headlines. We'll begin in the NBA. We are about a month away from the 2020 class being inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and today some news came out. Kobe Bryant, the late great Kobe Bryant, will be introduced by Michael Jordan. Wondered who would present Kobe into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Jordan spoke at Kobe's memorial service a little over a year ago, and he's also going to introduce women's basketball coach Kim Mulkey, making him the only Hall of Famer presenting multiple candidates during this year's induction ceremony. But if you go back to what MJ had to say at Kobe's memorial, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was beautiful. It was a side of Michael Jordan that we rarely gotten to see. So when the news came out today that he would be introducing Kobe, I think it's fitting. I know there's always a lot of comparisons, Kobe to Michael, and it's kind of foolish in a sense, because both of those guys had such immense respect for one another. It's fun for fans and media to go back and forth on. I've gone back and forth with you on this several times, right, as far as who is greater, Kobe or Michael. The bottom line is, Kobe modeled so much of his game after Michael Jordan and really relied on MJ as a brother. And that's what MJ said during his speech. He said it was almost aggravating, but then it became a passion to help him out. And this is going to be, I think, a spectacular Hall of Fame induction ceremony all the way around, because now you have one of the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, who I believe will rightfully pay homage to Kobe. Right? I can't think of anyone else better to immortalize one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. And outside of Kobe being inducted into the Hall of Fame, we have some big names. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, I believe David Robinson and Isaiah Thomas are going to introduce those two. Rudy Tomjanovich will be presented by Hakeem Olajuwon and Calvin Murphy. I mean, this is going to be a really entertaining Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And typically, the only one out of the three major sports I don't traditionally care for, it's basketball, because it's just done differently. Right? Cooperstown is Cooperstown, Canton is Canton, but basketball is done a little bit on a different scale. But I do believe that this year it's going to be fantastic. Plus, I'm a little biased with my love for Kobe Bryant, but Michael Jordan is going to serve as Kobe's presenter at the Naismith Hall of Fame. Some sad news coming out of the NBA today. LaMarcus Aldridge has abruptly retired from the NBA due to a health scare. This is sad news. It was big when San Antonio, A, tried to trade Aldridge, and then B, bought him out. And the talk was, where would Aldridge go? Then he signs with the Brooklyn Nets. Exactly what they needed, right? On Twitter today, he announced that he was retiring after experiencing an irregular heartbeat during his final appearance with the team. He said, quote, for 15 years, I put basketball first, and now it's time to put my health and family first. He's only 35 years old. Said he experienced the irregular heartbeat during the Nets game against the Lakers on Saturday, which the team was just destroyed. It was a horrible outing for the Brooklyn Nets. And then after that game, his condition worsened. He said the next morning, he told the team what was going on, and they were great about getting him to the hospital. And even though he's better now, it's still one of the scariest things that he has ever experienced. And so he is going to retire from the game of basketball. Nets general manager Sean Marks said the team fully supports his decision to retire. During an appearance on Jalen and Jacoby, Damian Lillard said he was just shocked to hear this news. This was earlier today. It's a sad deal, because when you look at how close LaMarcus Aldridge was to at least competing for an NBA championship, and I know that there are things that are bigger than the game. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But this is a guy that has dedicated his life to basketball. He's only 35 years old, and now due to a health scare, it's been taken away when he is actually playing on a team that gives him the best opportunity to win a championship. It's sad all the way around. Hopefully LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be fine, but his NBA career is now officially over as he is retired from the game of basketball. We move over to Major League Baseball. Fernando Tatis Jr. is taking batting practice for the Padres, and there is an optimism that he will be activated tomorrow. And if that's the case, he'll be available for the weekend showdown with the Dodgers. This is the most interesting series to this point in time of this young marathon season. The Padres were the team of the offseason. They made move after move, going out and getting Yu Darvish and Blake Snell and spending all this money on this this massive bullpen and their starting rotation. And they were doing it to run down the defending World Series champion Dodgers. There's no question about it. So it's a battle of SoCal. And the Padres have been building at this for a couple of seasons. This year, they go all in. When Tatis Jr. went down, I thought it was his wrist when he was swinging. But it was his shoulder. And he had shoulder issues in spring training. And this is the same guy that just signed a 14-year contract with the Padres and has yet to play 162 games in his career. I believe this is too risky. Now, the Padres would know better than anyone else. But tomorrow marks the first day that he is eligible to be activated off the IL since basically separating his left shoulder. It was a violent swing, and that's the thing about Tatis Jr. I don't know if this guy can keep from swinging violently. It's one of the things that makes him so good. I hope he's healthy. Really, I hope he is, because this is one of the most exciting young players in baseball. And the game's in great shape right now because there's young, marketable players. And at the front of the line is Fernando Tatis Jr. Now, Jace Tingler, manager of the Padres, said that he still needs to meet the Padres medical department, but added that it was the best day he has seen from Tatis in terms of hitting since suffering that injury. This kid's only 22 years old, and I hope it's not too soon. Nonetheless, this is going to be an excellent series. Best series, most interesting series of the season so far. Because again, this is what the Padres were building for in the offseason. Now it is Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. Everyone wearing number 42. The Braves topped the Marlins earlier today in a shootout. The Marlins had 9 hits, but it didn't matter. It was Atlanta picking up a 7-6 win. It's been a high-scoring series between those two teams. Those same Padres I was just talking about a moment ago, they picked up a win over the Pittsburgh Pirates, 8-3. Chris Paddock finally getting a win for the Padres. The Mariners pick up a victory over the Baltimore Orioles 4-2 in that contest. The Twins get the best of the Red Sox 4-3, and it's the Indians over the White Sox 4-2. One game came to a close in seven innings today due to a doubleheader. The Mariners and the Orioles, that was game two of that doubleheader, and the Mariners picked up a 2-1 win, so they are in a sweep over the Baltimore Orioles. Still plenty of baseball to be had today. 5:05, we get the Diamondbacks and the Nationals. Patrick Corbin will be on the bump for Washington. 5:10 tonight's the Rangers and the Rays. So coming up at 6 o'clock, we get the Blue Jays and the Royals. 7:40, Tigers and A's. The A's now at 5-7, closing in on that 500 mark after that extremely slow start. The Dodgers will look for their, I can't call it a second sweep of the Rockies, second consecutive series sweep. They have a chance to blow away the Rockies tonight in a three-game set. Julio Urias will be on the mound against Austin Gomber. Gomber, the guy that the Rockies got in the deal for Nolan Arenado, has not been good so far this year. 0-2 with a 2.8 ERA. And the one game postponed, the Mets were rained out for the third time in 5 days, the second time with Philadelphia. And so that game has been postponed. The makeup date is set for June 25th. We jump over to the NBA because, again, you got to remember, we're down into the teens as far as games left in the NBA. Short slate coming up tonight. Milwaukee at Atlanta, 5:30 tip-off on TNT. Golden State at Cleveland at 6. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, the Lakers play the Celtics. That's the second game of the doubleheader on TNT. The nightcap, it's the Kings and the Suns. The Jazz have the night off. They return tomorrow afternoon to play host to Indiana. And then they'll take on the Lakers on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Jazz fans always get up for that game. Utah right now, the number one team of the Western Conference. A couple of big games coming up. Again, we don't have much left in the regular season. We'd be talking playoffs right now if it was a normal season. But obviously, we're not there. About 17 games left for the Utah Jazz as we get down into the home stretch. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, on the show today, we're going to be joined by Coach Bill Evans of USU Eastern. We'll also catch up with former Major League Baseball player and NL MVP Dave Parker. That's all straight ahead, and it's here on Drive Time Sports. We're back right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
A scoreboard update for you. The USU Eastern Lady Eagles right now up 2-0. And their opening round matchup of the national tournament over Missouri. Had to work for it. Won the first one 25-22. Had a comeback in the second to take it home 26-24. USU Eastern, the number four seed, trying to take out the host school in this tournament. And that would put USU Eastern into the final eight in the national tournament. That would mean three more wins away from a national championship. We'll keep you up to date on this scoreboard. We're also going to talk USU Eastern athletics, but basketball. Last Friday, season came to an end. The USU Eastern men's team suffering a loss to CSI in the semifinals of the conference tournament. That put a bow on the first year under new head coach Bill Evans, and Coach Evans is joining us right now to not only talk about last Friday's game, but the season as a whole as we recap it. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for your interest in us.
Yeah, Coach, it was a fun year. It really was. A new era of USU Eastern basketball. And I know there were ups. I know there were downs. Unfortunately, the season came to an end over the weekend and a loss to CSI on Friday in the semifinals of the conference tournament. And you and I had an opportunity to sit down after that game. It was a contest where the team held a five-point lead midway through the second half and then just went ice cold offensively. And really, it's a simplistic way of looking at things, but that's basically what happened.
You know, geez, if we could figure that out, you and I'd be rich. We could sell it to everybody, and that would never happen. But we had a hard time scoring the ball. I don't think that was one of our strengths during the year anyway. I think that we, you know, probably lacked some shooting. And that, you know, that hurt us. But generally speaking, I think that was our biggest Achilles heel, so to speak, would be our perimeter shooting. I think we probably were last in the league in three-point field goal percentage. We didn't shoot a ton of them because we couldn't make a ton of them. When you can make them, you can shoot them. But I think that was an area that that we need to address in our recruiting this coming year.
Coach, that semifinal matchup against CSI, it's a top 10 team in the country. And it's a one-game playoff. It's win or go home. You have an opportunity to do some great things. And I know going in as an underdog, I mean, you've been on both sides, being the favorite and being the underdog. When you're the underdog in a conference tournament or the NCAA tournament, is it just the idea of applying pressure to that favorite? I mean, because that's what you guys did. You applied pressure to them. You forced CSI to really work out of some urgency in the second half.
Yeah. You know, we played CSI really close every game we played. You know, we had a 5-point lead with about 8 minutes to go and missed the front end of the 1-on-1, and then we stole the ball and missed a layup, and then we missed another, you know, really good shot. And then they went on a run, and good teams do that. But we had a chance, and you know, against a really good team like CSI, that might be all you could ask for is a chance.
Yeah, that's the perfect way of wording it. I mean, just having a chance. And you and I talked about playing teams four times. I've always felt like when you got to play a team four times, typically it'll benefit the underdog, Coach. So you knew everything there was to know about CSI going into that game. Did you find some things leading up to it that you thought you guys could exploit and sneak out a victory with?
Well, I'm a big believer in that when you go to a venue like that, and you and I have talked about it, sometimes your three-point shooting accuracy is not as good, you know, because of the newness, the venue, the background, and all those kinds of things. So I thought almost that we had played in there one time already and CSI hadn't. I think that's almost a little bit of an advantage, even though we're playing back-to-back days. You know, Lotto got off to a really good start against us. You know, I think he made maybe three in a row. You know, we had some ideas of some things that we wanted to do defensively that might throw them off balance a little bit, and we used a little bit of a box against them. We triangled them a little bit. We went to the box early in the game, and I think, and I was looking at the stats, and I think I have them right here. Let me just look real quick. Of course, I got the wrong one. Isn't that happens a lot with me? Let's see. Lotto was 3 for 6 from three in the game, and he made all three of those in about the first 5 minutes or 6 minutes of the game. He didn't make another three the rest of the game. And so we boxed him out of our matchup zone, and that was pretty much it for him. But boy, he hit three big ones early, and we did a good job on Dutt. I thought he only had 7 points. But Lotto got it going early, ended up with 16, and KT Rainey, who I think is a really good player, had 14. So they had two guys in double figures, and we had four guys in double figures. You know, I think the final score is really a little bit misleading in that, you know, we were doing some things at the very end to try to catch up with them, and they got a couple layups. So it was a lot better game than the score indicates, I think.
Again, our guest right now, Coach Bill Evans of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. Coach, we'll talk about the season as a whole, and now that it's done, I mean, you and I had quickly talked about this throughout the year. It was odd for everyone. I mean, the COVID season, the JUCO season typically begins in October. Here we are pushing it all the way back to January. A lot of basketball in a very short period of time, and we're talking about the longest collegiate sport that there is. How difficult was it, now that you can look back and kind of assess things, really just navigating a team through a COVID season?
Well, you know, obviously it was one that I'd never encountered before as a coach. And so we were, you know, we took pretty much all of December. We took that off because I thought that would be the best. You know, you send guys home, you bring them back. You send guys home, you bring them back. So it was different. It was unique. You know, I really think that the NJCA and putting it back, I think there was a lot of wisdom there. I think they made a really, really good decision. You know, our administration, you know, Coach Madsen did a really good job with, you know, the help of others, President Dart, to really monitor and I'm looking for a big word, and I should never do that, but did a really good job of monitoring the COVID situation within our athletic department and making sure that we were, you know, masking up and maintaining spacing and all those kinds of things. So I think the combination of our administration and the NJCAA, I think they made a really good decision on putting the season back a little bit. I really do.
You inherited a squad coach, and I know in JUCO the turnover rate is so high. Sometimes you only have kids for a year. Maximum, you're going to get them three if they have a red shirt. But inheriting a team and taking pieces off of last year's squad and having those kids learn Coach Bill Evans' system compared to what they had learned the previous year or 2 years under Coach Vando, it's almost unreasonable based off of the fact that you had a very short period of time for the season. How difficult is that to take over a program? I mean, it's not the first time you've done it. How difficult is that to take over a program and try to install a new system and a new philosophy in the minds of kids?
Yeah, you know, I think there's obviously some challenges there. I think, you know, getting to know those kids and trying to develop a relationship and getting them to trust the things that you believe in and getting them to understand, you know, how you want to do things in, who you are, those kinds of things. You know, I think it is challenging, but, you know, a lot of guys have to do it. And I think we did a pretty good job based on all the challenges we had with the COVID and all those kinds of things of getting everyone on the same page. So,
Coach, it's absolutely no disrespect to any kid that was on the team this year that was a holdover from Coach Vando's era, but how exciting is it to be in a position where next year, you know, every single kid on that team is a kid that was recruited by you, Coach Evans?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think kids today aren't very patient. And I think the play year and movie year type thing is almost contagious. You know, there are over 1,300 kids in the NCAA Division I transfer portal. Kids are looking for instant gratification, or they're always looking for something different, something better in their eyes. And I think that's a real challenge today. I mean, right now, we have a commitment from about four or five holdovers of guys that are definitely coming back. And some of them were guys that Coach Vando recruited. So I'll use Illich as my example. Illich is getting some interest from Division II schools, but he's elected to come back. And he's elected to come back because he'll be able to graduate from USUE with a four-year degree. You know, it's kind of like a revolving door. You never know who's going to come back. You know, I had a couple guys tell me that they wanted to go home and think about what they wanted to do in regards to next year at USUE. This is a hard time for coaches because of that, and also because of sometimes you have to tell guys that, you know, I'm not going to have you back. And that's hard for me to do, but it's something that it's necessary. It's an evil necessity.
You mentioned Elich and the fact that he would come back, Coach, which would be a fourth year for him, due to the fact that he redshirted, play 2 years, but the NJCAA is going to allow kids this year to come back for another year of eligibility. And it brings me to a fun aspect of coaching at USU Eastern, the fact that a kid can get a four-year degree here at USU Eastern. That's not the case at most other JUCOs. How do you use that to your advantage in recruiting, or do you try to at all?
Oh, I do, but I don't think very many of the guys that we're going to be recruiting are going to be here for 4 years. This is unique with the COVID and with the red shirt and because of our institution. But one thing I do tell them as I recruit them, because I recruit a lot of guys that are just, they're NCAA qualifiers. They just didn't get an opportunity. Maybe you go to Division I. And I don't think very many Division I teams now are really recruiting the high school kid for sure. They will recruit some junior college kids, but you know, that's one of the first thing I tell them, that we're a 4-year institution that plays junior college basketball, and I tell them, you know, you're not going to be taking basket weaving 1 and finger painting 2 at USUE. You're going to be taking classes that you can use toward a degree at a 4-year institution. I use that a lot.
Well, Coach, we get in with this. Just going back and looking at the 2020-21 season, all in all, if you had to pinpoint the bright spot, something that you look back on and say, okay, this was a correct step in the right direction where we need to go to becoming a top program in this conference, what was it? Does one individual moment stand out, or is it kind of maybe a book of many?
Well, coaches probably shouldn't say this. I don't think that we overachieved, and coaches shouldn't say that. They should say that we overachieved, but I'm a little bit different. I don't think we overachieved, don't think we underachieved. You know, the only game that maybe we won that maybe we shouldn't have won would be the Salt Lake game. You know, we lost to CSI 4 times. We lost to Snow 3 times. You know, we lost to Snow in overtime. We lost to them. We led the whole game, then lost at the end. And then they came in here, and they beat us. They beat us pretty good. You know, Snow, I think, has a really good team. Salt Lake beat us twice. One time, the first time they beat us pretty good, and then we beat them. And then it was a really good game at their place. So I'm not sure we really overachieved, but again, I don't think we underachieved either. You know, we were ranked 37th in the country by the Massey polls, and I don't. My assistants are really into this. The last time they were ranked that high was in 2012, which is quite a long time ago. So we did some good things. Our GPA team GPA is really good. You know, we've got at least 3 guys that are going to graduate with a 4-year degree next year. You know, all of our guys that needed to get AAs are getting AA degrees to move on. So I guess from that standpoint, we did some good things along the way. You know, we lost to CNCC at home in a game that you'd like to have back. So we lost some games maybe we could have won that we didn't win.
Well, Coach, it was truly a pleasure, and it was a lot of fun to follow you guys throughout the year and call the games and get to talk to you on a weekly basis. I appreciate everything you've done for us to make the job really easy. I mean, it was a lot of fun to chit-chat with you. Thank you so much for all the time you've given us throughout the year, and I look forward to next season.
You bet. My pleasure. You call anytime. Thank you.
Again, that's Coach Bill Evans of the USU Eastern men's basketball team taking out the time to join us to recap the 2021 season. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move to the national side of things. We'll talk to Dave Parker, former National League MVP. We'll talk about his career and a new book that he has released. That's coming up next. The Cobra will join us here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Feeling like a bullet, jumping at a gun.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Really looking forward to speaking to our next guest. He spent many years in Major League Baseball. Came on the scene with the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1973. His career ended in 1991 with the Toronto Blue Jays. And during that time frame, he was a seven-time All-Star, a two-time World Series champ, one ring with the Pirates, one with the Oakland A's. He was also the NL MVP in 1978. And he's in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. He is Dave Parker, also known as the Cobra. And that is the name of his new book, Cobra: A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. He's joining us over the phone right now. Dave, a pleasure to get you on. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure being on the show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We love talking baseball here on the show. And before we get rolling, I got to ask you about the book, Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. What went into this? What made you think, okay, I got a story to tell. I got these experiences that I want to put in a book and share with the public. What was it that brought you to that point?
Well, everybody else had their opinion of Dave Parker, what he was as a player and otherwise. So I basically wanted to give my view of me as an individual.
In this book, it goes in detail, and I'll tell you right out of the gate, one of the most interesting stories for me was the idea that here you are playing the same position as Roberto Clemente, who's an all-time great, a legend. We're talking about one of the greatest to ever do it. And when you made your big league debut in 1973, here's this Pirates organization still reeling from this tragedy, and you embraced that. There was no pressure. At least that's what I took from the book. There was no pressure. You embraced the fact that you could step right in and at least on the field carry on that legacy of Roberto Clemente.
Yes, I felt like I was the guy for the job after the tragic death of Roberto. I felt that I could play in the major leagues at 19, so I had the confidence and the ability. It was just a matter of getting there. I wish I could have got there in another way other than the death of Roberto, but he was the greatest. They called him the greatest, and he put that on display every day he was on the field, and it was a big chance for me to pick his brain and learn a lot from him. And he taught me how to reach back and throw the ball with my body and the velocity that I picked up from playing with him and learning.
When you talk about being able to step in a spot like that, and even though you were ready and you felt like you could have played to the big leagues at the age of 19, and I know that this was an organization that was stacked in the outfield, is it the pressure that you were able to just feed off of and excel because of it?
Yeah, well, I welcome the pressure. You know, I'm a competitive guy, and I'd been in the minor leagues for 3 years, and it was time for me to advance to the major leagues. So I welcomed the pressure. I looked at myself as establishing myself as the first Dave Parker instead of the guy that took over for Roberto.
Again, we're being joined right now by Dave Parker, former Major League Baseball player who's got just a terrific resume all the way down, a seven-time All-Star, a two-time World Series champion, NL MVP in 1978. Dave, when we go back and look at your career, again, spanning from 1973, moving all the way to 1991 when it ended with the Toronto Blue Jays, if someone was to say Dave Parker is one of the greatest baseball players of the 70s, but Dave Parker didn't really reach his full potential, what would you say to those people?
I would tell them that I was the best in the 70s, just like you did. I welcome the challenge of being a major league player. I was fortunate to play with some good guys. But baseball is something that I take close to heart, and I appreciate playing with my peers. The ones I played against and the ones I played with. Pete Rose was a prime example. He was a guy that played the game the way it should be played, and it was a thrill playing against him and a thrill playing with him.
Dave, looking at the book in itself, there's several chapters that we can sit and dissect, but is there a particular story or a particular aspect of your career that you really wanted to highlight in this book?
I'd stand accountable for everything that I did in baseball as a player and on the field, off the field. I stand accountable, and I live off of what I did as a player. I think that is Hall of Fame numbers, and it ain't happened yet, so I'm still waiting on that to happen.
Let's talk about some of the shortcomings. Going back to 1985, how did that particular instance, and I guess the events leading up to it, shape the second half of your career from 1985, where you really picked things up with the Reds and just kind of continued on winning a World Series with the A's? How did that particular time frame shape the remainder of your career?
Well, I was injured. I was hurt for like 2 years. I had two knee surgeries, two ruptured thumbs, and I couldn't produce like I normally could. I was involved in that drug trial, which I just told you I stand accountable for, but the numbers that I put up when I went to Cincinnati was all because of me being healthy. I was healthy, and I showed baseball that I was healthy. I even told the pitchers when I went to Cincinnati that I had something special for them when I got healthy again. And I invented this trot called the thing. And I displayed it, and the pitchers didn't like it too much because I had some productive years. I had four productive years in Cincinnati, almost as good as the years I had in Pittsburgh.
I'm always so entertained by the idea of a second life of an athlete. If we break it down into phases, the back half of a career. In your career, you experienced the pinnacle in two separate eras, 1979 world champion, 1989 world champion. How do those two differ, and does one mean more to you than the other?
Well, I appreciated being with Pittsburgh because they gave me the opportunity to play Major League ball. But overall team, Oakland had everything. They had Ricky Henderson leading off, Corny Langford hitting second, Canseco hitting third, I hit fourth, McGuire hit fifth, Dave Henderson hit sixth, Steinbach hit seventh, Tony Phillips hit eighth, and Walt Weiss hit ninth. That was an all-star team. We used to have teams come out, pitchers that don't pitch on that day, wouldn't even come out and watch us hit BP because we were that intimidating.
You got to carry a different kind of swag, right, when you know you're that intimidating.
Well, I believe in intimidating anyway. I used to swing a sludge hammer, an 8-pound sludge on the on-deck circle, me and Stargell. And we did that for intimidation. So part of my game and most of my game was about intimidation.
Dave, if we talk about your time with the Oakland A's, knowing the experience or the success that you guys manage to have, and you talked about all the talent that you guys went toe-to-toe or you were able to go to war with night in and night out, when you look back on the fact that you had an opportunity to win two World Series championships, do you have any regrets about the 88 World Series?
Yeah. I played left field for the first half of the game, and I got taken out of the game and went in and took a shot and came to watch the end of it. And when I saw Kirk Gibson dragging that bat to the plate, and we in L.A., Hollywood, I kind of knew that he was going to do some damage, and he hit a home run. But I knew it prior to it happening. I could see it taking place.
Does the loss in 88 still sting, even though you have two rings?
No. A World Series is great regardless how you get it. And made the mistake with Gibson to take the 88 one away, but we were right back where it belonged in 89. So we did what champions do. You leave something somewhere that belonged to you, you go back and get it. We went back and got it.
Isn't it an exhausting feeling after a loss knowing, boy, that's a 162-game marathon season? And I'm asking this because of the resiliency of an athlete, right? I mean, that's such a marathon of a season. Where do you find the grit to battle back, especially at this stage in your career where you're towards the end, but where do you find the grit to battle back and become a champion that late after everything that you've gone through and after suffering a loss to win in 1989? Where did you find that?
Well, I found two different things to deal with. One was to play for the series, and one was to play for my personal numbers. And I mentored a lot of young players like Shedfield, Eric Davis, Ben Larkin, Paul O'Neill. I had that to work on, too. I went to teach these guys how to be major leaguers, and I did.
As far as your individual accolades, one of the things I've taken from the book so far with where I'm at, team accolades always meant more to you than individual accolades. At least that's the perception that I've taken from this book. So when we talk about the fact that you're a seven-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, NL MVP in 1978, but you're also a part of the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame, does that Cincinnati Reds recognition top the individual accolades of an NL MVP, a Gold Glove, a Silver Slugger? Does that top that?
It means a lot to me. So, having that entry into their Hall of Fame means a lot. So, whatever I've done, I did proudly.
Dave, I do have a couple of more questions for you before I let you go, and this is more related to the game rather than the book itself. I had one listener, when I told them I was going to be interviewing Dave Parker, they said, ask Dave how he put up such great numbers in 79 while having to listen to We Are Family 10 times a night.
That song, I think of the Pirates every time it come on. So it was easy to do. You know, we were having fun. We was playing for a series. And that was easy for us to play under the We Are Family.
As far as the competition that you would see on the field, is there a particular team that you really got up for? It doesn't matter if you were playing for the Pirates, the Reds, the A's. It doesn't matter. Is there a particular team that you just really wanted to stick it to?
Philadelphia.
Why is that?
We had a rivalry with Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we was playing for the Eastern Division Championship. And that in itself creates a rivalry.
Is there a particular pitcher that you just really look forward to facing?
Steve Carlton, even though he struck me out more than any pitcher I ever faced. But I hit more home runs off of him than any other pitcher I faced. So we had a feast of phantoms relationship.
Is there a particular pitcher that you knew you would own? And maybe it's the same question, but a guy that you knew, I don't care what type of stuff you have today, I will dominate you. You know it, and I know it. Is there a particular player or pitcher that stands out in that regard as well?
Well, Andy Hawkins, I used to hit real well. I mean, he punched me out three times in one game, and I caught the last out in the top of the ninth. And I ran across the mound and gave the ball to Andy and said, I never struck out four times in a game. I said, do you think you can do it? And he got me two strikes, no balls, and threw me a sinker away. And I flipped it out of right field for a home run.
Dave Parker, again, our guest right now, author of the new book, Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. Dave, I'm going to leave you with this last question. The biggest thing that you want your fans to take from this book, Cobra, is what?
The brotherhood, the relationships. We establish great relationships, and society needs to take a note on that, too.
Well, Dave, it was a pleasure to speak with you over the last 15 minutes. I've thoroughly enjoyed the book. Thank you so much for taking out the time to join us. I wish you many more years of success and lots of success with this book as well. It truly was a pleasure to speak with you about your time and career in the game of baseball.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Definitely my pleasure. That's Dave Parker again, the Cobra. Always love hearing the old stories, and I think that Dave Parker has a very interesting story all the way around, an entertaining athlete, one of the best arms in baseball during his time. I don't think there's any question about it. We are at the top of this edition of the show. I want to thank Dave Parker and also Coach Bill Evans for taking out the time to join us. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Be safe. I am out.